Thank you very much. I have to say, where on earth did you get that photograph? Oh, it's really terrible. I need to get rid of that off the internet somehow. Right, yes, so my name is Rhys Morgan. I'm the Director for Skills and Inclusion at the Royal Academy of Engineering. It's always very difficult going last when you've heard all your things that you're going to talk about be mentioned already, and particularly following Toby's excellent talk there. But nonetheless, what I'd like to do is talk about three particular vectors of change that I see in the future of work. And naturally, as you might expect, this is kind of focused on engineering. It does have relevance to other sectors and other disciplines as well, but largely based around my experience in engineering. And those three vectors are what we might call global responsibility, which I'll go into in a bit more detail, complexity, which Toby's already touched on, and data and digitalization, picking up the theme of this morning as well. So I want to start with this. This is, if we think about since the Industrial Revolution, so the first 250 years since the Industrial Revolution, all of the things we've made, everything we've produced, has increased our carbon emissions. And what we're really saying now from 2025 onwards is that we have to reverse that. That's a fundamental change in how we engineer, how we produce, why we produce, and what we produce. And that requires a very different set of thinking skills, different mindset. And it's something we're trying to grapple with at the moment. We haven't got there yet because we're still consuming resources, we're still consuming energy to produce. And we need to rethink that if we're to meet our net zero global targets. So that's a real challenge for us. And as we think about global responsibility within engineering, we at the Royal Academy of Engineering, we have three kind of things that we're thinking about. Inclusion, and we've touched upon diversity inclusion already this morning, but actually I'm going to talk about something slightly different around that inclusion. Ethics, again, has been coming up with AI, but actually there are broader ethical implications about what we do, how we make things, and who we make them for. And then sustainability. Again, we've had focus on environmental sustainability, but there are other elements of sustainability as well. So on this inclusion, and we've Toby very eloquently articulated the value, the power of having more diverse teams and more diverse disciplines working together. But actually, when we think about inclusion, we can also think about the inclusive outcomes of what we do. And in engineering, there are real challenges if we're not inclusive about what we make. So for example, when Apple developed its health apps originally, the entirely male, white software engineering workforce didn't consider the menstrual cycle of women. So once a month, there was an alert on the health apps for women saying, you might need to go to the doctor, you've got very high blood pressure, you're looking quite flushed, or whatever it might be. So there's an example of not having inclusive outcomes. A second might be around automated soap dispensers that don't work for black skin. A third one, very famously, seatbelt crash test dummies that were based on male physiology, not considering women, and particularly pregnant women. And that caused quite serious implications in the safety of car seatbelts. So thinking about inclusion in that respect, the inclusive outcomes of what we do is a really important part of being engineers and being globally responsible engineers. The second element, ethics, we've talked about the ethics of AI and the ethics and bias and things like that, but there are wider implications around ethics as well, whistleblowing within organizations, the ethics, the behavior of organizations to not just put money at the very forefront of what they do. And what we're seeing increasingly, and then obviously sustainability, environmental sustainability, but also societal sustainability, inclusion within society thinking about different sectors of society when we're designing, when we're making our products, when we're engineering our goods and services. And what we're seeing within engineering, for sure, is that many new young people entering our sectors are looking for these attributes, these values in companies. And they're turning away from certain companies that don't have these values for them. They're looking for this to reflect their own personal desires and wants in their work. So these are really important aspects of the values of young people. The second, and Toby touched again on this complexity, is really to think about how we have changed as a society. And if we think back to the very early engineers from Roman times right through to the Enlightenment and through to the Industrial Revolution, innovation was based largely on the ingenuity of an individual. And in fact, engineering comes from the Latin ingenium, from which we also get ingenuity, genius, and so on. But actually, what happened since probably the late 1940s, 1950s, and you could probably trace it back to something like the Manhattan Project, was that the innovation was largely dealing with complexity rather than a certain individual's genius enabling that to take place. So what's happened since then, over the last 50 to 70 years, is our increasingly complex technologies have enabled greater societal complexity. But that greater societal complexity is feeding the need for more technological advances as well, and greater, more complex technology. So we think about the introduction of semiconductors, silicon, and microchips, and then we look at the introduction of lasers, fiber optics, that drives the telecommunication systems of the world, and then mobile, broadband, wireless, and so on. All of those increasingly complex technologies feeding our society, and our society demanding more and more, faster internet speeds, more connectivity, and so on. And again, what we see is that these complex systems approaches require much greater levels of interdisciplinarity than before. And we're talking now not just within engineering, so we can look within engineering at material science, as we saw earlier, right at the very beginning of the day, material science, computing, robotics, mechanical engineering, electronics, and so on and so forth. But actually bringing even greater disciplines into the mix as well, psychology, behavioral science, economics, sociology, politics, and so on. And innovation actually is occurring at the intersects of these subject areas. And I mention this because I think it's really important. When we talk about skills, actually, we mustn't forget knowledge, because new knowledge is what's driving the innovation at these interfaces. And that's really important. And I think we risk talking about skills at the expense of knowledge, because knowledge will continue to be an important driving force. And then to wrap all this together, we need systems thinkers, people who can see the complete system, the interactions and the interdependencies of all these different elements of our increasingly complex systems, technologies, and processes. And this is an example of that kind of way of thinking more interdisciplinary way. So this is a highway in Los Angeles. It runs through the heart of Los Angeles. And 30 or 40 years ago, the answer to this problem would be, let's build more lanes. Now, if we skip forward to 5 years ago, the answer was, let's use technology. And in fact, Highways England challenged the engineering companies, the civil engineering companies, to increase the capacity of the English motorway road system by 20% without building any more roads. And they came up with a technological solution, using the hard shoulders and the kind of technology-driven motorway. Now, there have been problems with that. They're very well versed, well understood. But actually, you know, technology will be able to improve that, will be able to solve that issue. But actually, since the coronavirus pandemic, we're finding fewer people needing to travel on those roads on a daily basis. So suddenly, psychology, behavioral science, sociology has come into play in that. Politics as well, and you could say economics. You could say, let's look in the future at road charging, different types of road charging processes that can reduce those kind of peak drive times. That was on Thanksgiving Eve, so you can kind of expect it in America. And engineers, what we're doing is we're trying to identify those meta skills, actually, that Toby talked about, to really drive these kind of ways of thinking. And very often, engineering is kind of talked about as being about creative problem solving. But a really important part of engineering is actually problem finding. So defining the problem before we start jumping into finding a solution. So for example, I might say, I need to cross the River Thames. Can you build me a bridge? Well, you might say, well, hold on, how often are you gonna cross? If you're only gonna do it the once, I'll give you a boat. It'll be a lot cheaper and quicker. So we need to think about the problem that we're kind of identifying. And then once we've ascertained that we're going to be crossing very regularly back and forth with different levels of goods and services, goods and products and so on, sheep and you know various other things that we're driving across, we might say, okay, now let's have a look at the ground conditions. It might be that we can't build a bridge where we want to because the soil is too soft or whatever it might be. So we need to then think about other alternatives. It might be a tunnel and so forth. And so we start to think about, you know, we start to sketch, we start to draw, we start to adapt our solutions based on the new information we're finding. And so we're going through a process of iterative improvement constantly. And as we're doing that, we're starting to think about the systems. Well, what are the knock-on implications of the roads to the north and to the south of the river? So we're starting to see the bigger picture, the bigger systems impact of our solution. And that's very much part of this kind of broadening the engineering skills base beyond that, just that disciplinary technical content. And then the third and final part I wanted to touch on is data and digitalization. And I was really fascinated by Jill's presentation this morning, earlier, about manufacturing and data. And of course, you know, data is going to be so important in our systems, in our manufacturing base, within our all sorts of different sectors. And we're already seeing this happening. So there's a really fascinating story. I'm in a very privileged position at the Royal Academy of Engineering where I get to meet a lot of very senior leaders in engineering. And I was recently talking to the chief exec of Network Rail. And he said to me, we have about 20,000 bridges and tunnels in Network Rail. And the way we check on their condition is that we take a photograph from about 10 years ago. And we go up to the bridge and we look at the photograph and we look at the bridge. And we go, yep, looks about the same. And then they go off and do that for the other 19,000 pieces of infrastructure. Now, a future model will be that there are sensors and condition monitoring devices within that structure. And they're continually monitoring whether that bridge is going out of tolerance. We're not waiting for someone to go along very manually and just roughly inspect. But that's going to generate terabytes and terabytes of data. So we need to be able to interrogate that data through things like AI. But what's really fascinating, and I worked on some Made Smarter work up in the northeast of England, is that actually, you know, we're talking about AI here this morning. AI is a very tiny fraction of, you know, what's happening within engineering. It's the very, very edge. And we have a huge spectrum of abilities and technological advancements within engineering and manufacturing. And I do remember someone saying the way they deal with cybersecurity within their company is to make sure none of the computers are plugged into the internet and they super glue all the USB ports so you can't put anything in there. You know, that is the reality in many manufacturing companies. And again, many manufacturing companies are not even using spreadsheets. They're not even using Excel to keep track of their products and data. So we've got a long, long spectrum of need from very, very basic kind of data integration into the production systems and so on, right up to AI. And I'll leave you with this story that I heard just last week. A very eminent structural engineer had set a test for some students. He's a visiting lecturer at Bath University. And he'd asked these students to come up with some solutions for a proposal from the British Antarctic Survey for a new base station for scientists. And this base station had to be able to move along with the shifting polar ice caps. So it was a kind of, they had to come up with various designs. And so he went round, split them up into four groups, and they spent their time coming up with ideas, using their habits of mind, sketching and so on. And he did that throughout, and then he walked around the different groups. And first group showed their sketches and he discussed and so on. The second group did the same, the third group, and he got to the fourth group, and yet again they talked about how they'd gone about the problem solution, setting out the problem statement. And then they showed their sketches, and then they showed these three rendered images of their solutions. And this was all done on some free AI software in about 1 minute of them typing in, we need a base station for scientists in Antarctica. So, this is going to drive such change when we're thinking about design and, how we think about what we're making and how we're designing in the future. I'll leave you with that. Thank you.